Coming up, The Newlywed Game is a serious matter if you don't know how to navigate your way through communication, money, and expectations. So Reva Pomerantz wrote a guidebook to help us find our way. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Dean. And if you enjoy a variety of books with authentic Jewish values, we read you loud and clear. Do people who know you ask for book recommendations? What's on your reading table? Well, I ask people that question a lot, and it's a regular feature on this podcast as well. And in just a little while, we will check in with this week's special reading table contributor, Rabbi Menachem Tenenbaum, the city director of NCSY Cleveland, my hometown. But first, every parent knows that raising children is a joy and also a constant test of our patience and wits. And then the whole Soon By You chapter comes. Well, my guest on this week's episode of 613 Books Podcast, bestselling author Reva Pomerantz, knows all too well that marrying off our children is a challenge unlike any other. And that's why she wrote her groundbreaking book, Navigating the Newlyweds. From relationships to communication to money and expectations, Reva has filled this book with practical and very honest advice from the biggest experts in the Torah world. And I'm delighted to announce to you, my 613 Books Podcast listeners, that Menucha Publishers offers a 15% discount on Reva Pomerantz's book, Navigating the Newlyweds. Just click the special Menucha Publishers link in this episode's show notes to purchase your copy of Navigating the Newlyweds and enter the discount code RIVA15 at the checkout. That's RIVA and the number 15 with no space between RIVA and 15, just RIVA15. And I'll repeat this offer after our interview, but for now, it's my pleasure to give a hearty welcome to 613 Books Podcast, Reva Pomerantz.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather. Such a privilege.
Well, it's a privilege that I get to speak with you about Navigating the Newlyweds, such an important book. And just tell us first, who is this book written for?
Okay, so this book began as my own personal journey, marrying off my daughter. I wrote an article about it. And then once I married off my child and went through that whole process, so many of my friends were going through it as well. And I started getting people confiding in me and talking about, you know, the things that they're encountering. And someone said, you know, you really need to do a book on this because there's nothing out there. And I realized there really was no resource out there. You know, you're expected to just know. There's tons of books on, you know, pregnancy and nursing and childbirth. And then, you know, you can have support with every other kind of life cycle event that happens basically in the lifestyle of a Jewish person. But when it comes to marrying off children, I just felt like, whoa, this is such an intense and important time, and I'm going it alone. So I'm a writer. That's the way I process life. So I hit my editor up with this idea. She loved it. And it began, as you probably know, as an Ami magazine column. And the questions just kept pouring in. It was like unbelievable because it touches such a nerve in so many people. So that's how basically it began.
So I remember that column very well. I read all the magazines, and this was certainly something that I and many, many readers followed. And I was not surprised at all to see that it culminated in book form as well. And, you know, I've also noticed on your website that this daughter of yours, she's not your only child. Like, thank God, you have several more children. So now that you've done this, how has your experience informed the writing about this life stage for you?
It's interesting. My husband and I were just having a conversation about this, how there's so much that goes in marrying off a child. You know, there's the technical, there's the emotional, there's the physical, there's so many levels and there's so many layers. And this is one of the topics that I talk about in the book. I really think that it brings to the fore the whole parenting and the whole journey and the whole relationship that that parent and that child had from the moment of birth until that moment when they're actually standing under the chuppah. So I think it's like certain aspects will be kind of like a copy paste, a repeat maybe of marrying off my daughter, Bracha. But when it comes to subsequent children, every child is going to be that different dynamic. You know, the communication is in a certain style and the chemistry works in a different way. And there's also the other side to take into consideration. That's why this is, you know, so complex and intricate and beautiful, because you have a completely new set of circumstances, new people that you're meeting for the first time. You didn't choose them. They're there. And they come with their own culture and expectations and vision. And, you know, it's a very, very changing dynamic, which makes it really exciting and challenging. And I think that, you know, if you can look at it in a certain perspective, then it's like this whole adventure every single time. I haven't married anybody off yet since Bracha, but Bezrat Hashem.
Yeah, you talk about that it's dynamic, you talk about challenges, and thankfully for your readers, you interviewed many prominent people in the Torah observant world in preparation on the topic of newlyweds. So let's talk about Shana Rishona, right? That's the ball of fun. I mean, it is expected that newlyweds are in for quite a few surprises and discoveries. So let's talk about your research. Like, from your research, from your experience, what kinds of circumstances are a bit trivial or short-term bumps in the road, and what warrants more serious concern?
Okay, so that's a great question. And like you said, I am privileged to have interviewed like the cream of the crop, like just really the best and the brightest. And the advice in the book is just beyond. I'll just tell you like a quick story. Like, I know somebody who just got married. She has two children. She married off her son a few years ago, and now her daughter got married. And she's obviously very, very close with her children. And they have a beautiful relationship. And before her daughter got married, she sat her mom down, and she said, "Listen, my college teacher told me to tell you that you have to just know that I am going to vanish off the face of this earth, and I'm not going to surface for like a few months, and then we're going to be okay." And, you know, it was actually, I felt like a really, really wise kala teacher to prepare this mother for the inevitable, which is that when a couple goes into Shana Rishona, we should want and we should support them in going into their own little bubble, because there's so much going on for them. We talk about it in the book. I interviewed actually a few people on this topic, but we talk about this, how this couple is building a new life together. They're combining, you know, their interests, their goals, their personalities. There's so much that has to be worked on and clicked. And they have this, you know, euphoria and this, you know, this tremendous simcha and the fun and festivities that only is going to keep them going for so long until like they hit real life. You know, he's going to go to his schedule, she's going to go to her schedule. And we want them to have that magic of being in their own little world. So I think that one of the things that I've heard on the side of the parents is just this sheer and utter bewilderment and shock and fear of what happened to my child. You know, we used to talk every day, and now they're gone and they don't return my calls and they're not coming to consult with me. You know, this is like, this is probably, you know, the greatest fear. And then, you know, once people can get into their head and remember, we're parents, okay? We would, you know, fight off a bear for this child. This is our most important, you know, this is something paramount. And so when that child is doing their own thing and the parent feels like that child has kind of cut off from their life, so that parent could get very, very involved in their own headspace. And, you know, our heads are sometimes, you know, they're sometimes scary places to be. We come to all kinds of conclusions, and certain things, you know, are said that we wish we could unsay later in the heat of the moment. So I think that, you know, that's one of the solid pieces of advice that several experts in the book talk about, where you got to let go and you've got to believe in this couple and give them space and just let them struggle it out.
I hear. That's really good to hear, especially since I personally have that ahead of me, God willing, in a few years' time. I'm bracing myself for that. What do the experts have to say, though, about what is considered that Shana Rishona kind of trivial short-term things, and when is there cause for concern? Like, speaking for the actual couple themselves, what's...
Right. You're 100% asking a very, very important question. We have a whole section devoted to that. What if there's a red flag? What if something seems wrong? So yeah, so certain things, they seem to kind of fall under the more extreme. If a child is really cutting off, meaning that they're suddenly not, you know, not coming for Shabbos at all. I'm not talking about every other week. I'm not talking about every 3 weeks. If a child seems to be uncomfortable, you know, with the parent. And we're talking about in cases where there was a healthy relationship beforehand, because if the relationship is not healthy beforehand, so sometimes like that opportunity to be married to somebody who loves and nurtures this child can kind of make other issues, you know, kind of put those more in the focus. And then that child might make shifts in the relationship with her family of origin. And in that case, the parent might want to examine the new relationship in light of the old relationship. That is kind of an aside, because that was something that we talk about in the book as well. But in a case where there was a healthy relationship, parent-child relationship, and this child is completely gone, and it's been, you know, a few months of just gentle, you know, hi, I'm here, how are you, you know, little the parent on but the part of the parent, little gifts, little care packages, whatever, but the child is not coming back. And to the extent that the parent is worried that maybe there's something going on which appears maybe controlling on the part of the spouse, maybe there's some kind of, you know, other warning signs, like one of the things that we talk about, like, is with, you know, moodiness in the child, extreme moodiness when they come to visit, certain clues like a change of personality, you know, that a parent could notice. And we're talking about something that's going on consistently, not just, you know, once. People have their ups and downs and all arounds. And certainly it's not, you know, one of the things that the experts stress is that, you know, a parent has to be very careful before making any kind of an intervention, because a parent often is actually the worst person in the situation to kind of try to get involved, because they're automatically on one side. So there's a recommendation to actually involve like a neutral third party, like a kala teacher, a chassan teacher, a rav that the couple is close to or that the parents are close to, just to get an etzah before any kind of, you know, flag is raised. If there's some kind of strange spending pattern that the parent becomes privy to that would seem, you know, very extreme, either that, you know, that the parent would come into the house and there's no food in the house, or there's comments being made about, oh no, we, you know, so-and-so says, you know, I shouldn't buy those things, or I shouldn't, certain things that, you know, taken across a broader period of time that add up to maybe intimate that there's some kind of control thing going on. Somebody's extremely unhappy in the marriage. Somebody's feeling stifled, that kind of a thing. Those would be causes for concern after a number of months when the picture becomes clearer. And then somebody should be consulted, somebody very wise who kind of does this. It's has to be somebody who understands and who has the background to be able to advise, really.
Got it. Yes, that's so, so, so important. I'd like to talk for a moment about in-laws, right? So that's a very, very important factor in all of this. What's the top concern that parents of the bride and groom usually have about the other side, the other parents?
So I think when it boils down to it, I think that, you know, it's a very basic concern, you know, very basic human need. Will they like me? Will they like me? Are they going to accept me? Am I going to fit in? Are they going to judge me? What are they going to think of me? And the truth is that speaking to so many chassans and kalas and in-laws and on all sides of the equation, even siblings-in-law, right? Sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law, depending on the family makeup, everybody has that same thought. No matter if you're, you know, marrying off your 15th child and you're in your, you know, 60s or 70s, or if you're marrying off your first child and you're in your 40s, or if you're a kala who's, you know, 18, or you're a kala who's 35, it doesn't really matter. You're always wondering, are they going to like me? What are they going to think of me? And that's one of the things we talk about in the book, just the communication and the relationships. You know, all of our people skills we continue to develop over the course of a lifetime. And when we marry off or when we get married, maybe we think that we're done with our learning curve, but no. It just starts off like it just kind of kicks into high gear over here, because you have these people who suddenly in one instant become your family. And often you don't meet those people until the day you get engaged to your spouse. And all of a sudden they're your family, you know, whether you like it or not. And it really depends what you're going to do about it, because they're there and they're important. That's the thing. They're important. And I happen to hate mother-in-law jokes. I have a beautiful relationship with my mother-in-law, Baruch Hashem. I have a beautiful relationship with my mechutanim. And I think that the jokes are not only overrated, but the jokes are damaging, because we're kind of raised to feel that these people are going to be our worst enemies and our biggest nightmares. But these people are really important in the lives of our spouse, and they can be really important in our lives as well. But we have to understand that they come from a different world. They might have two eyes and a nose and a mouth, but they are not us. They come from a different world. And even if we feel like we understand our spouse really well, does not mean that we're going to intuitively and instinctively understand our in-laws and their family and their home and their, you know, their values and their culture. And there's always going to be things that are going to come up. And probably the best piece of advice I would give is just to stop comparing and just to realize that everybody's way is their way, and just to find the beauty and the good in their way, because whatever you focus on gets magnified. So if you're looking, you know, for the good qualities in these people, and even if there's kind of like these comments that maybe you could interpret one way, maybe they didn't even mean it that way. And then, you know, the head starts again, like I was saying before. And, you know, it's really unfortunate, because they just made an offhand comment. So if we could just like choose to focus on the good and also communicate if there is a problem and something's going on that you're not enjoying, in a moment of calm, you can just say, and if you want, you can write a note, a nice note, so you don't say anything you don't want to say. And it's okay to communicate, I would prefer if you would X. And you might want to double check, you know, check in with a friend who's walked this path before you, check in with a mentor. Is this a reasonable request, or is this something that I need to work on? Because one of the things that we learn all throughout our lives is that there are some things that we just need to deal with. This is our stuff. And then there's other things that we could kind of enlist other people's help in getting through by asking, please, can you not, or please, could you this? So, you know, there's always this balance. It's a votus amidos, which is what, you know, we're working on ourselves. Maybe the stakes are a bit higher here because there's, you know, other people to consider and relationships that will last a lifetime. But it just comes down to the same fundamental principles of, you know, take care of your own midos and talk when appropriate. And I wish everybody that opportunity to bust all those in-law myths and have beautiful relationships. And everybody is flawed. That's the thing.
Let's also talk a little bit about money, because across cultures of all kinds, money is just one of those primary reasons that married couples might fight, right? So in your book, what are some measures that couples can take in order to avoid messy money matters?
Yeah, so right. So we're tackling all the juicy things. First, in-laws, now money. So so yeah, money can be a big one. And actually, the expert who weighed in about money, what she pointed out is that at the end of the day, and I know that this is kind of like the, you know, it's a simple, straightforward answer to a very complicated issue, but it's actually really interesting how when you look beneath the surface, you see that it's really not as complex as we make it out to be. At the end of the day, you know, we all have stuff around money. Money is just one of those things. And at the end of the day, if couples want to be successful in the area of money, they really just need to communicate. They really just need to break through the stigma of talking about money. For some reason, we're all really, really uncomfortable and scared talking about money. And for sure, when a couple gets married and they each come from different stuff about money, I'm not even talking about, you know, he, you know, his family, you know, goes on luxury vacations and her family, you know, sits at home. I'm not talking about even that. I'm talking about, you know, down to the nitty gritty of how do we plan? How do we save? How do we spend? And if couples can actually get over their fear and their discomfort in talking about what they come from, number one, where they are right now and where they'd like to be, so that they don't have to be on the same page, but they have to be able to understand each other. And it could be that over the course of their marriage, they'll be able to kind of close the gaps between their different perspectives. Or it could be that they have to be accommodating of the differences in their preferences, in their spending, in their goals, but they have to be able to work together. They have to be able to find a happy medium. And actually, one of the resources that I give is, you know, there are actually courses that are given to newlyweds and pre-newlyweds, pre-wedding courses, given to couples on managing money from some of the prominent financial coaching organizations that offer it. Some private coaches offer it. And I think it's such a valuable thing to give to a couple. You're giving them the gift of just opening up this potentially very thorny topic, and you're smoothing the way for them. Money is something that's going to happen from day one until 120. We can't deny it. No matter how much money you have in the bank, money is going to be a thing. So I think it's fantastic.
Yes, indeed. So, so, so important. And I am glad you brought up courses, because indeed, it is just a huge cottage industry now, being able to take courses online from the comfort of your home and learn so many skills and get guidance on so many topics that interest everybody who wants to take online courses. However, not every type of course out there is appropriate for a religious Jewish household, whether it's language, topic matter. I could go on and on. This is something that you personally have noticed and have taken action. So I'm wondering if you can tell us, what action have you taken and what have you launched?
Yeah, so I'm never really bored. So as you said, you know, Heather, this is something that has been weighing on my mind since COVID, where a lot of us, you know, learned the power of learning from home. And I tried to take a course and I couldn't even get through the first 2 minutes of it because the language was so foul. And I started thinking, you know, why not give our people, right? People, and it's not only religious people, it's anybody who has, you know, their core values and they don't want that language and they want a modestly dressed person who's going to be giving over this topic, and give it over in a quality digital way so that they could watch it anytime, anywhere from the comfort of the living room. If it's, you know, a young mother who's cannot get out at night, if it's somebody who's homebound, or even if it's somebody who's just really busy and wants to, you know, do this on the train, on their commute to work. So what I've launched is this amazing courses marketplace. It's called Skill Nosh. The idea is it's bite-sized brain food, no junk. And it's courses that I'm enabling course creators on every topic under the sun. You know, we were just talking about money. This Rivka Leibowitz, who I was just talking about, who offers this course for couples, is going to be offering a course on Skill Nosh for couples to, you know, to learn about money before they get married. And I have another course there from Elisa Avra, who is talking about investing, you know, and I have courses on parenting, and I have music courses and art courses, and a course on the Enneagram, you know, understanding your personality type. The idea is that we're opening up the whole world of learning and hobbies and upgrading your skills so that wherever you are and whoever you are, there's something that you can nosh on that will upgrade your life. You know, the research shows that when you learn something new, so you have real health benefits, you have cognitive benefits, well-being, you just feel better, you know, and this way we're kind of giving it to people in the most palatable, convenient way possible. And when I do something like, I feel like the Orthodox community deserves the best. So I really tried to give it, you know, just the nice look and, you know, the good quality. And
I also want to mention that the people that you mentioned who are some of the course creators, but I've checked out Skill Nosh, the people that you have that are the instructors are really top. These are not just, you know, people that are nice and have a little something to say. For example, I binge watched Dina Ackerman's illustration courses, and
she's amazing.
I mean, wow. So these are not people that are second tier. These are top tier instructors. So I think it's a worthwhile thing to check out. And there's some free content, and there's also other levels of content that people can subscribe to and make it a good investment all the way around. Well, I really want to thank you for your time, Riva, today, for speaking with us about all of your important resources, whether it's navigating the newlyweds and also Skill Nosh. Good luck to you. Thanks so much,
Riva. Thank you for having me, Heather. Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Riva Pomerantz is an entrepreneur, life coach, and author of 15 best-selling books. She's also the founder of Skill Nosh, an online learning platform that serves the global Froom community with high-quality professional courses that don't compromise on our principles and standards. For more information, check out skillnosh.com. That's skillnosh.com. And to contact Riva Pomerantz about writing, mentoring, speaking engagements, and more, you can drop her a line through her website, rivapomerantz.com. That's rivapomerantz.com. And remember that you, my 613 Books podcast listeners, are entitled to grab Menucha Publishing Publishers 15% discount on Riva Pomerantz's book, Navigating the Newlyweds. Just click the special Manucha Publishers link in this episode's show notes to purchase your copy of Navigating the Newlyweds and enter the discount code RIVA15 at the checkout. That's RIVA and the number 15 with no space between Riva and 15, just RIVA15.
And now it's time to find out what is on the reading table of today's Jewish movers and shakers.
And on this episode of 613 Books Podcast, Rabbi Menachem Tannenbaum is on the line to tell us what book is on his reading table. He is also the author of a new book called Three Steps Forward, Unlocking the Shmona Esrei and Our Connection with Hashem. And on a future episode of 613 Books Podcast, Rabbi Tannenbaum will be back to tell us more about his new book, about which I'm delighted to speak with him. It deserves a place on your bookshelf, too. All right, Rabbi Menachem Tannenbaum, what book is on your reading table?
Hi, Heather. What's on my reading table today is the biography of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman called Rabbi Elchanan. Now, he's a pre-war Rosh Hashiva. He headed actually a few yeshivas until he had his final one in Baranovich. But what's fascinating about him is he was a close student to the Chavetz Chaim. Now, the Chavetz Chaim is mentioned all the time, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan. He's quoted so often. But to hear and to see the insights from Rabbi Chanan's experiences actually being in his home has really changed my view on who the Chavetz Chaim and who Rabbi Chanan is. And the reason why I love biographies in general, and specifically this one, is I love to aspire for greatness. I love to want to become even greater than my current self. And reading biographies, I find that. And this biography, it's the oldest art scroll biography. It's the first, very first one. It's actually older than me. Is the Rabbi Chanan biography, which is on my reading table.
Rabbi Menachem Tannenbaum is the Associate Regional Director of Central East NCSY and the City Director of Cleveland NCSY. For more information about Rabbi Tannenbaum's new book, Three Steps Forward, or to invite him to speak to your community or organization, send him an email, rabbit@ncsy.org. That's rabbit@ncsy.org. And that's what's on the shelf this week at 613 Books Podcast. I'm Heather Dean. Thanks for listening.
613 Books Podcast is produced and hosted by Heather Dean. Senior producer and director of operations, Greg Cohen. Consulting producer, Yiska Roth. Show announcer, Michael Doniger. Remember to like and subscribe to our show on your favorite app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your own preferred app, and never miss an episode. You can find all episodes of 613 Books Podcast by visiting our website, heatherdeanproductions.com.